He proceeds to tell me that all Americans are repressed, and that if I would just open myself up, my creativity would come back again. And when I said I wanted to reset the computer, I didn't mean double-click the mouse. I meant turn it off, turn it back on, but he had some other idea. So I explained to him, in the United States, you usually ask permission before you touch people's vaginas. And I know where you come from, that might be okay, but here it is not okay. And I ask him to leave, and he goes, okay, but you're gonna have to help me off the towel because I can't get up. So.
Hey, welcome to Raw Storytelling, a podcast where real people share real stories that are unscripted and uncensored, and I'm your host, Enid Nolasco. We're in 2021. Welcome to the first episode of this year, and the theme is going to be hindsight, because, you know, what better time to look back on years past and say, what the fuck did I do? So in case you don't know me, I am, like I mentioned, your host, Enid Nolasco. I am a brand designer, and I have a branding and design studio called Raw Made. And as part of my studio, I decided to create a community-facing project that brought together the community, I just said that, in South Florida. And then it grew from there, and it became Raw Storytelling. And then it grew even more and became this podcast where I can bring together people all around the world. Raw Storytelling has been around for a little over 3 years, and right now, because of COVID-19, we are only doing the podcast, but we used to do live shows. And you'll hear in this episode some stories from our live show that occurred back in August of 2019 that was themed hindsight. Where to find Raw Storytelling? We are Raw Storytelling on Facebook and Instagram, or you can go to rawstorytelling.org. And if you stop right now and give us a review, it really helps us grow and reach more people with these amazing stories that are just incredible and from everyday people like you and I. We're also known for our Too Raw to Share. These are anonymous secrets that our audience members and fans fill out, and we share the really juicy ones on our social media platforms and on the mic, as you will hear in this episode. And if you go to rawstorytelling.org/too-raw, that's T-O-O-R-A-W, or call our hotline 786-361-6112, you can share your own secret completely anonymously. Also on our website, you can find storytelling tips, featured stories, cool swag like t-shirts, stickers, and our poetry book called Grammatical Siblings. You can help us out by donating, because we aren't doing live shows, so we are not making any money. I'm putting my own money from my own pocket. So you can give us money by going to rawstorytelling.org/donate. Every dollar helps. Okay, on with the show. Thank you all for coming out tonight on this balmy August night. And I'm your host, Enid Nolasco, if you haven't met me before. I'm a little kooky and a little weird and a little perverted. Yeah. And tonight, our theme for tonight is hindsight. And if you haven't been here before, we are a true storytelling show, so everything that you will hear tonight is definitely true, as told by our storytellers, and I don't know what will come out of their mouth. Sometimes it doesn't go as planned, even though we plan. Yeah. I think I'm just gonna start. You want us to start? Yeah. So our first storyteller is an acupuncture physician and triathlon and yoga coach, and you can find her at meridiansandmarathons.com. What a beautiful name, right? And her name is Sandy Zia, and her story is titled Another One Down.
Let me just start with this. This is a very important framework that you must pick up before I go on. And that is, I am not a born athlete. Let me hear you say that back to me. She is not okay. So this is about 2012 or so, and I am living in the triathlon capital of the world. Yes, yes, you all know it as Omaha, Nebraska. Do y'all know where that is? It's in the heartland. That's right. A couple of you know where it is. So I'm the run lead for Lifetime Fitness in Omaha, and I'm doing a lot of running. And it doesn't take long in this job to grow tiresome of running. Gets a little boring running all those miles. So someone suggests to me, you know, you ought to take up biking and swimming. Okay, I do that. I borrow a bike and I dust off my one-piece swimsuit and I start biking and I start swimming. And I meet a gal at my health club. She's doing some swimming, some biking, and running. So over coffee one day at a place much like this, we're joking around and we say, wouldn't it be funny, like, haha, if we did a triathlon? Like, I can't even spell triathlon. But yeah, that sounds like a notion we should entertain. So sure enough, we sign up for a local short course triathlon. We do some structured workouts together, some swimming, some biking, some running. And our favorite part by far was always the coffee after the workouts. Okay, do you remember how we started this? She's not
a born athlete.
That's the love of the coffee talk after. So we do our race, we get it done, and my life changes. I am fucking hooked. I love it. I absolutely love it. So guess what I start doing? Swimming, biking, running, a lot more. So one day we're at the pool and we meet this retired gentleman north of 60, millionaire, and he starts musing with us about this event he did, and how we ought to consider also doing this event. I'm like, yeah, all right, so why don't you share with the group what this event is? Well, have you guys heard of Iron Man? It occurs to me he's not talking about the movie Iron Man, but this long course distance event. Now, let me, I have to make sure that you can wrap your head around when I say this long course event, what we're talking about here. Because I dismissed it, the guy's nuts, for even proposing it. So I go home and I do the research about what this Ironman is at ironman.com. It's frickin' 140.6 miles. I don't think I've covered that in my life in a car. So what do? 3 months later, I sign up. See, she knows me back there. Were you there? She might have been there. So when you sign up for Ironman, here's how it goes. You sign up 12 months away from the race start. So a lot like buying a home, having a child, and getting married, anything in the distant future is always a good idea, right? And then the fucking day comes. So, after many hours of training and being away from my family and my friends, there's a lot of chatter that starts. People are asking where I'm at, where I've been, where I'm going. The chatter starts to get a little negative. Who's taking Joey to soccer? Who's making the kids lunches? And how are they getting to school when she's in the pool at 6 a.m.? My family starts to suggest to me that it's not a good idea, it's not safe, and women aren't wired to go 140.6 miles. Ouch. So guess what I do? I swim, I bike, and I run. Somewhere along my training, I come along one of the books of Lance Armstrong, where he says, there's something about long course athletes that suggests they might be running from something. My list is long. A mom, midlife crisis, middle America, montaneity, uniformity, whatever. I keep cycling, swimming, and running. The day comes, I'm on the precipice about to get in the swim. Eminem is the background, that's the song. I come out of the water, I'm getting on the bike, and very early on in the bike, all the 20 and 30 something year old males who had everything to prove about crushing the bike are finding themselves destroyed because they went too hard and too fast for something that is a long course proposition. I stopped to help many of them along the way, offering water, assistance, going to get a volunteer and sending them back, etc. But at a certain point, I realized I am not going to meet my objective of finishing this race if I continue to do so. And let me say that I had three very clear black and white objectives for this event. Number one, do not die. Pretty straightforward. Number two, do not get injured. Also kind of important, didn't want it to be a one and done. And then number three, finish in the time allotted. You have 17 hours. They don't care what your story is. At 17 hours, they're coming for you. Okay? So I realize I've got to forge ahead. I finish the bike. I start the 26.2 mile run, and the temperature in Louisville has now cooled down to 98 degrees. Awesome. When I finish the event, I hear something that I will never forget, and that is, Sandy Zia, today you are an Ironman. I come back completely unexpectedly a national hero, and that truly cushions the blow of limping and wincing in pain, peeling off my toenails, squatting and holding the wall to use the toilet. But every time I hear, Sandy, that was awesome, congratulations, the pain eases a little bit. So about 2 weeks after, the pain is about gone. Naturally, what do? I settle in at my desk, open up my laptop, log in to Ironman.com, and sign in for number two. Have a good night. Thank you.
But meanwhile, I have a really, really odd two rot to share. My favorite. It says, so remember the theme is hindsight. So this person's hindsight is, I would have not married my wife's brother just to change my last name. LOL. What? So many questions. Ah, I love it. Love it. Okay.
Where I ever had to freeze the day. Whole second to hide, I was to break space time continuum. So don't compare me with the force coming.
If you want to be up here, we are always looking for storytellers. In fact, we're looking for new storytellers, new faces to come up and share. And this is really, my shirt says real people, real stories. These are not professional performers of any kind. These are everyday people like you and me that just happen to have a really cool story they want to share, and we all have a story to share. And you don't need to be afraid, because I will coach you through the process. Just go to rawstorytelling.org and sign up to be a storyteller, and then you get as many sessions with me to work on your story as you need. Sometimes it's one, sometimes it's five, whatever it takes to make you feel comfortable to come up here and share a story. How about that? Are you gonna go and check it out? But our next storyteller only took one session. So she just wants to be introduced as Marita J, and her story is titled Taps. Marita, come on up.
Thanks for that. Okay. My brothers, my two older brothers, Mike and Tom, they were always considered quirky. So none of us were really surprised when, in their mid-20s, they decided to join an organization called the Society of Creative Anachronism. Now, you have seen these people if you've ever gone to a Renaissance fair. They are devoted to reenacting 900 years from the Dark Ages all the way to the Renaissance. Now, they'll dress in period costumes, they'll speak the language, they forge their weapons, they weave the fabric and make their clothes, and they go off into the woods to either have battles or live the period and without plumbing. And then they come back to somehow join real life, but usually briefly, because they're always going off again for another battle. Okay. Now, it took my brothers months to make their own chainmail, just so they could join in on the jousting and the battles. But they did it. And we kept saying, you know, this is just a phase. This will stop. They're not going to continue to do this, except my two brothers met two sisters at one of the Middle Kingdom banquets, and eventually they married. So now, nearly every weekend through spring and summer, they're off on either a war or a banquet or a feast, or there's a festival, and they're, you know, in the winter time is devoted to repairing your armor and your chainmail, and their wives are spinning wool, yes, and weaving fabric to make their next gown because there's a war coming up in the spring, so they have to get ready. Now, I've got to say, as this continued, holiday gift giving was becoming a nightmare for me, because all they wanted was either a new dagger or here, I want a shield and I need raw wool. So I had to start negotiating with the blacksmith and other tradespeople from the Middle Kingdom to get them to make these arcane objects for them. And on top of that, I had to beg them to accept modern currency because they barter. And apparently my skills in a law office were useless to them. So we carried on like this for some time, and there must have been a few weekends free, because then my brothers decided to join the Civil War. And Mike went into the Union and Tom went into the Confederacy. That way they could reenact the drama of brother versus brother on the battlefields. And then, of course, dragging their wives along. And this was fantastic, because now they had a whole new set of costumes to accrue and weaponry. And they had new places to travel for battlefields. And, you know, that took care of part of the fall. And since there were still gaps, they moved along, and they decided to backtrack. They decided what they really had to do was go back and join the Revolutionary Army so they could fight the British Redcoats, you know, for those reenactments. And those are definitely, you know, like during the fall foliage, because they like to see pretty leaves while they're shooting each other. And so now they've done that, and then they started through the years. They kept adding more and more wars into their lives. We did the 1812, they stuck in the Spanish-American. We picked up World War I, we did World War II, and they finally capped it off at the Korean War. Well, at least for my sake, birthday gifts got a lot easier once they started getting involved in campaigns in the 20th century. So, because they take money. But I never understood this, because it was that this fantasy world, this alternate life, had become more important to them than real life. And I just couldn't grasp their priorities. And it irritated me to hear that, you know, that house or car repairs they're being delayed because, you know, someone needs a new armor breastplate. And I couldn't accept these choices that they kept making. They seemed like lunatics to me and most of the rest of the family. So, but they carried on. Now, my brothers never had children, but they had been Eagle Scouts. So they became Scoutmasters. Now they can take boys into the woods and teach them camping skills and survival skills and probably to throw an axe and how to forge weapons. I don't know what was going on. But they now had very, very full lives. I mean, between the battles, the banquets, Boy Scouts backtracking to repairing all their weaponry, you know, and their houses turned into like these freakish museums of torture, perhaps. But This is the life they had, and it was very full. And but through the years, I must say that Mike grew to be portly. And eventually the call came, and I wasn't really surprised to hear he had a stroke, he died, military service, hurry, get here. Okay, even with the red eye, I get in, I get a rental, I'm racing the car from O'Hare 70 miles down to the funeral home. I get there just in time to, right before the service, I walk straight in, I go up to the coffin, I'm gonna pay quick respects as I can and throw myself in the pew in the front row where the family belongs. And I do not know why I expected him to be wearing a suit or pants, because there he was, laid out for all to see, dressed for the Crusades. And I'm talking the full chain mail, gauntlets. He's clutching a 6-foot greatsword. On his right hip, we've got an axe, because nothing says rest in peace like an axe on your hip. On the other side, he's got a dagger. There's a bow, there's arrows, there's a quiver, and for some reason, a slingshot. I don't know where that came in. And all of this is packed in all around him, and nestled up at the top of his head is his helmet. Okay, and it's all shiny, you know, for the festivities. And then I realize I'm looking, and on the tunic is this huge red cross. Now, we're Jewish. And there he is dressed as the Templar Knight for Christ. And I'm frozen in front of the coffin, and I mean, I know I'm supposed to move, but I can't even move. And I keep hearing, what? It was coming out of me. I just kept doing it. I didn't know how to stop it. It just kept, what? You know, and then I go, I pulled myself together, and I turn around, and I go, and I sit down in the first pew, you know, in shock. And I'm thinking, and I look, my brother's at the other end of the first aisle. He's looking straight. He won't even look at me. And I'm thinking, how could Tom not warn me that this was the military service he's talking about? How could he not give me any hint for this? Well, as I'm sitting, I'm too busy, I'm like angry, I'm growling, and then I start to become aware of all this noise, but not the, you know, the normal at a funeral where you get the murmuring of people talking to each other. Oh, how are you? Yes, it's so sad. It wasn't that. Well, there was some of that. But I'm becoming aware of the thumping and banging and scraping of metal, and they're squealing. And I finally turn around to see what is going on behind me. And there is the Union soldiers. Here's the Confederates. Back behind there is some revolutionary. It, you know, and some of the Redcoats came. Very nice. Very, you know, kind of them to join in. And, of course, we've got, you know, the Doughboys from World War I, World War II. I think there was Korean. I really couldn't tell by the insignias. And at least 5 Teddy Roosevelts. And, of course, all 900 years of the Society of Creative Anachronism was represented there. Now, and interspersed with all of these groups were 15 Boy Scouts. And my traumatized relatives. And I had to think to myself, what's going to happen? Then I realized what all the noises were. It turns out that all of the men had come armed fully for battle. I don't know what they thought was going to happen at the funeral home, but they're all prepared, fully armed. But none of them had learned the skill to navigate a funeral pew, you know, in a funeral home, with their swords and the rifles and the muskets and the bayonet and the, you know, the water canteen, and all this is going on. That's what all the crashing is and the scraping. And the women are no better off, because they've got gowns, and we're talking wimples and veils and hoop skirts, and all of this cacophony is going on. Well, the Boy Scouts, that's a different story. This was the greatest field trip ever for them, because they had never seen so much live weaponry. And it's all ready to be grabbed. Well, now, of course, Mike is in the coffin, Tom's sitting at the front row. So there was only two scoutmasters left to, you know, manage the group, and they were not up to the task, I'll tell you. So now it's up to the armies to try to keep the weapons from the kids, who were just fascinated by all of that. And then finally, they managed to barricade the boys by putting women in hoop skirts, you know, kind of, you know, so they couldn't get anywhere. And they could reach, but they couldn't get it. It settled down enough. The officiant comes out. He's going to start this. I can't even listen. I am still so taken by what this travesty in front of me that I'm staring at in the coffin. And he went on, and I don't even know what he said. I'm so busy hugging my grievances, and I am, you know, working on how offended I am, that I have to hold on to how pissed off I am the whole time. And then finally, near the end, it's going to finish up, and I think, I got to get out of here quick. I don't want any of these relatives to come up to me. And I almost made a clean getaway, but one of them comes up to me and says, "Thank God your parents are dead, and they didn't have to see this." And I said, "Oh, do you don't think they're not watching this?" I said, "All of heaven is tuned into this freak show." I said, wait till we chapter two, when we go to the military cemetery. Because my brother was a Marine, so he's going to be buried in a national military cemetery, dressed for the only war that had nothing to do with our country. Now, it was a pretty long trip to the cemetery, and if you've never been to one of these services at a military cemetery, they're very formal and dignified, and there's a very strict protocol and very strict timeline. I mean, we're talking military time, my friends. Get in, get out, get moving. Okay, so we're lined up, ready to go, and I have to say, the military police lost their composure when they discovered there were multiple vans filled with characters all brandishing weapons. And now we all had to get out of our vehicles to have our vehicles inspected and us inspected, and then they were selling all the fake armies that they had to relinquish their weapons. Well, that caused a whole hullabaloo, because now all the different eras had their protocol of how they relinquish a weapon, and whether it's to their king or to, you know, the sergeant, and they all knew the rules of what they did, you know, out when they're camping in the woods, and, you know, and they were trying to, some are trying to build those little teepees with rifles, and, you know, they're falling, and all this is, well, now this may not surprise you, but the MPs, you know, they don't really have a sense of humor. And after about 5 minutes of this nonsense, they raised their weapons. And then suddenly all the pretense ended and all the weapons were gathered up, the knives, the daggers, the swords, the muskets, everything, were taken and shoved into this room and locked. And they said, "Come back afterwards if you have to." Okay. And so now we're allowed to proceed to go to the appointed pavilion for this service. And it's open air, so that even when you're sitting, you can look out and see, it really is, it's a beautiful, serene place with lots of trees, rolling hills, and you can see dotted on all the little gravestones way in the distance. Well, the widow decided that the Boy Scouts should be the pallbearers. No one told the Boy Scouts. And the Boy Scouts, having become bored between the service, the long car ride, the whole you know, disarmament ceremonies or fiasco that went on, half of them have now already taken off for the woods nearby, you know, at foraging or something like Mike taught them to do. And so now, you know, now we had, the Civil War went out and rounded them up again, you know, got them back in, but no amount of coaxing would get them to pull a coffin. It wasn't happening. So the duty had to be reassigned to World War II. World War II took, and they had to do double time quick because now we're running late. And now we can try to get them up there. And we're moving forward. Now, the ceremony, it was with the military protocol and the pomp. And it was lovely, except I wish I had known that coming up behind me would be the bagpipes. Before they started blowing the dirge in my ear, and I've got to say, the Boy Scouts didn't appreciate it either, because they all threw their hands over their ears and started howling like dogs until it finally stopped. Now, we managed to maintain order again. We went forward with the ceremony, and they managed somehow to get through and keep it, the remainder uneventful until the 21-gun salute. With the first round of shots, the Boy Scouts were leaping, cheering, clapping. I mean, again, this just can't keeps getting better and better for them. Now, I will say, during all of this, there is a Marine honor guard, you know, standing on each side of the coffin, and they are trained to remain stoic because for the solemn and for the purpose, to be strong for the family, for you. Well, even he couldn't, you know, keep his composure. He turns and he looks at me with disbelief that I had brought these jackals to the cemetery. So I immediately pointed to my brother Tom. Not me, him. He's the one that, you know. Now, the service is finally over. I stayed seated because all the crashing and bashing as they're now trying again to, you know, get out. And, you know, even if you don't have your weapons, when you're sitting in armor, it's pretty noisy when you get up and walk. So they're cromping around behind me, and I'm hearing all this jibber jabber about what's the protocol to rearm our forces and who should be requesting it first, and do we send the king or do we send his emissary? And, blah, 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 blah. And I'm listening to this, and I could feel this anger building in me as I just listened to this nonsense. And I realized, my brother was a Marine. Just like our father. My dad served in World War II in Korea. My younger brother, he was a gunnery sergeant in the Navy. Just like my mom was in World War II. My grandfather actually was a doughboy in World War I in France. At 18, Mike was sent to Vietnam with two of his classmates. And 4 years later, only Mike came back alive, and he was never the same. But just like Dad, he wouldn't speak of it. He would never talk about the life of war he had actually lived, refused. So instead, he came back and he spent the rest of his life putting on costumes, playing make-believe war, you know, marching into battle with his friends back there. And I kept hearing this in my mind. The words were going over and over and over again in my head. And I was, my brother was a Marine. He fought a real war, not play wars, a real war. And I kept hearing the words over and over and over and over and over again until it stopped. And I finally could hear the words that Mike had never spoken aloud. In make-believe wars, everyone comes home alive. And no one is broken.
Thank you.
Now you see why it took just one call. Thank you so much. It's so funny because when I did have that call with her, my biggest concern was like, but that's the kind of funeral I want. Because I'm a Renaissance Festival season pass holder and I do dress up like all that stuff. I don't have a musket, but I do have the water canteen, the bustier thing, the all the clanky stuff. So I was like, I'll give it a chance to see what she has to say, and then she blew me away. So give her another round of applause. Okay. To Roger Scher, and I love this one. In hindsight, I should have bought a better bra. Yes, yes, happens all the time. And in case you don't wear a bra, this is a thought that occurs a lot, just so you know. We have Millicent Huser. She's a trainer, a coach, and a consultant who can be found at LCIW Strategies and Millie Huser on Instagram, and her story is titled Only in Hollyweird Beach.
Thank you. Yeah, so this might help you from now on, Enid. It's loving, courageous, inspirational woman. And I don't always feel courageous. I was just leaning over to my husband. I'm like, I'm fucking nervous. Why do I do this to myself? Like, you know, when you're driving here and my stomach's like, but that's not what my story is actually about. I love when Enid said, I should have known. Because my situation, what occurred to me on Hollywood Beach, I should have known. You see, and if you're from Hollywood, you know Hollyweird is a great explanation of that area. I actually lived there, and 2017 summer, I had that moment where I had writer's block. Now, I'm not a writer, so writer's block isn't exactly what it is, but I'm a creative being, and I came to a place where I wasn't creating. I did create. I created Netflix, my bed, and Doritos for a while. And I woke up one morning and I'm like, not today. Today, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to go and I'm going to reset the computer. You know, I'm going to turn it off and turn it back on. And when I turn it back on, it's going to run like normal, right? I got it. I'm going to do this. I've done this before. I've gone out, I've meditated, I've fast, I spend the day by myself, not really talking, reset the computer, and then downloads start happening again, right? Because nothing's downloading. So I get to the beach, I ride my bike to the beach, I get out there, find a little shady spot under a palm tree, you know, Mexican music's playing in the background, and I hear construction and kids are playing, I lay down on the beach, I close my eyes, and I feel this presence. You know when you're like, your eyes are closed, but you know someone's there. I open my eyes, and here's this old man standing like right here. And I'm like, hello? He goes, can I join you? He has a very thick accent. I'm not sure if it's like Scottish or Irish, but he has a thick accent, you know? And I'm like, sure, have a seat on my towel. Because if you know me, I never say no to talking to strangers, ever, ever. To my husband's dismay, I never say no. So this gentleman joins me, and his name's Pierre. He's here from Scotland, but he's born in France, and he is a sex therapist from Scotland, here creating a documentary about autism. So I have been working in psychology for a long time. I know what a sex therapist is. I know what autism is. I know what documentaries are. So we have this really amazing long conversation about everything you can think of on the planet. We talk about children. We talk about work. We talk about politics. We talk about everything. And I'm explaining to him that I'm having struggles with creative. I'm like having writer's block, and I'm not able to like download information or my creative juices anymore. Remember that I said juices coming up soon. So he says, do you trust me? And of course I trust you, because I have blind trust for everyone on the planet. And he says, close your eyes. So what do? I close my eyes. I just know something good's gonna happen. I'm gonna start downloading. It's gonna be amazing. All of a sudden, I feel his hand on my vagina. Not the juices I wanted flowing. That is not what I expected. And I like go, okay, look, you're making me uncomfortable. He proceeds to tell me that all Americans are repressed and that if I would just open myself up, my creativity would come back again. And when I said I wanted to reset the computer, I didn't mean double click the mouse. I meant turn it off, turn it back on, but he had some other ideas. So I explained to him, in the United States, you usually ask permission before you touch people's vaginas. And I know where you come from, that might be okay, but here it is not okay. And I ask him to leave, and he goes, okay, but you're gonna have to help me off the towel because I can't get up. So help him off the towel, send him on his way. I ride my bike home, and this is playing in my mind, right? Like, why me? What did I do? Why me? And then I have a moment where I was like, I'm going to find out who this fucker is. I look him up. He is a sex therapist and an international sex therapist. This particular sex therapist has sex with his patients. He's a sex surrogate. Now, he probably told me that when we were sitting there, but because I saw old man, I thought, no fucking way. He's like an American sex therapist, right? Give him homework, send him home, bring him back, ask him about their homework. No, their homework happens in the room. So I'm like, he told me everything he was gonna do to me. So now I join the Me Too. Me too, I fell for it as well. And really, to be honest with you, the worst part of the whole situation was I had to tell my husband that once again I spoke to a stranger. And he's like, I told you, stop talking to all those people. I'm like, oh, I know, I promise, but I really will talk again. So what I will tell you has happened since then, every situation in my life, every circumstances in my life usually turns out this way. I look at it from going into it, and I see it one way. I see it one way when I'm in it, and then when I look back, it's a whole nother perspective. So when I look back at that situation, I see it from the perspective of what actually happened, you know? So creepy old guy on the beach, yeah, double-clicked my mouse, right? Truth is, I could have kicked his ass. Had I not been married, maybe I'd have let him keep clicking my mouse. Who knows, like, what would have happened? But today I say, why not me? You know, like, I could go back in that situation and I could say, oh, I'll never do that again. But the truth is it did get my creative juices flowing again. Not just the, you know, some juices. I mean, it really did. It got me thinking again. It got me opened up to new possibilities. And it had me, you know, tell you guys this story. So it wasn't all bad. It wasn't all good either. And it's a valuable lesson, which is, ask questions. When people say things to you like, do you trust me? Why? What are you getting ready to do? Thank you.
If you love the show, please leave us a review. Like I mentioned, it really helps us. Or you can send me a question or a comment to Enid, that's E-N-I-D, at rawstorytelling.org. You can also find my work, like I mentioned, at my branding and design studio called Raw Made. So yeah, please hire me and let's keep this show going by hiring me to do some design work, right? Also, sign up for our newsletter at rawstorytelling.org or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Raw Storytelling for the latest news about what's happening with Raw Storytelling. So thank you to DJ Apocalypse 7 for the audio recording of this show. Fabiel Lozada is our podcast editor, and Cafe Collective was our host venue. Raw Storytelling is a production of branding and design studio Raw Made. Learn more at rawmade.co. The music you heard in this episode is by Glass Candy, Superpose, and other varied artists featured on our live show recordings. Until next time, keep it raw.